This is Audible.
Audible Original Publishing presents Outland, Book 1 in the Quantum Earth series, written by Dennis E. Taylor, performed by Ray Porter. Dedication. I would like to dedicate this book to my wife, Blaheen, who understands me yet doesn't run screaming from the room, and to my daughter, Tina, who completed our family. Part 1. Be careful what you wish for. Prologue. June 5th. Mike Nedman leaned back in his chair and glared at his boss. You want me to bury this? It wasn't phrased as a question. Andrew Kensington sighed and looked down for a moment, visibly trying for calm. Come on, Mike, don't get all dramatic. This isn't a cover-up. I just want me to downplay it. Yeah, I heard you. Fuck's sake, Andrew. 2 weeks ago, Geyser Hill parboiled some tourists, and now another group's been pan-fried on Firehole Lake Drive. How the shit do you downplay that kind of thing? This isn't the first time either of these things has happened, Mike. Not even recently. The apocalypse isn't imminent or anything. You know how the media likes to hype this kind of story. I'm just saying, don't give them extra ammo. Like pointing out that we've had more earthquake swarms in the last 3 months than we've had in years. Or that the average and maximum magnitudes have been going up. Or talking about the sharp rise in uplift, which are also nothing new. Now it was Mike's turn to sigh. He gazed out the window to give himself a chance to get his anger under control. As usual, the seemingly endless forest of lodgepole pines was immediately calming. Andrew waited patiently, apparently content to let him set the pace. Mike leaned forward and picked up the draft report that his boss had dropped on his desk. Red ink decorated the laser-printed sheets. He took a moment to be amused that they still walked paper reports around and added comments by hand in this day and age. Look, Andrew, all that is true, but these things have never happened all at the same time. And they have never all been increasing intensity at the same time. Uplift could be this, hydrothermal explosions could be that, all very innocent and mundane. But when these things start happening all at once, it's coming from deeper down, and that's never good news. A lot of assumptions there, Mike. We're geologists. We're paid to evaluate geological events and form conclusions. I'm not being unreasonable. Your report isn't reasonable. It's alarmist. This isn't really a debate, Mike. Tone it down. Andrew waited a moment for more argument, then turned and walked away. Mike picked up the report and scanned the red strikeouts and comments. Fine. He would remove opinions, extrapolations, and conclusions. But Andrew couldn't order him to remove the data. And honestly, Andrew wouldn't know incriminating data if it landed on his foot wrapped around a brick. With a silent snarl, Mike pulled open his laptop. 1. The Melt. June 7th. Erin Savard's hand went to her mouth as she watched the news report. Terror at Yellowstone, scrolled across the bottom of the screen. Gasps and excited comments from the other people in the cafeteria echoed her shock. A woman stood in the middle of Fire Hill Road looking wildly around, seemingly making a decision. She tried to take a step, and her foot came out of its shoe. Her eyes grew wide, and she paused, foot raised in the air and terror plain on her face. She looked back at her shoe, stuck in the asphalt, then turned to look off camera. The camera panned to the right to show a man reaching for her and urging her on. She took a step, pulling her other foot out of its shoe, and screamed as her bare flesh touched the road's surface. Only her momentum saved her from a face plant and potentially fatal burns. In 3 steps, she made it to the side of the road and collapsed, moaning, into the man's arms. The camera panned to show other victims, rocking in pain or being embraced by friends or family. Then the video pulled back, showing the news anchor with an expression of professional, deep concern.
Yikes!
Erin's stomach did a flip-flop as she tried to imagine running on semi-molten asphalt. She turned to look at her 2 table mates.
I think I'll bring a couple pairs of good boots for the field trip.
What happened anyway?
Leslie asked.
Underground lava flow, Erin replied. There are tons of lava tubes under Yellowstone. Once in a while, one gets a fresh flow of lava, and it heats the ground, or in this case, the road. And this one was hot enough to melt it quickly and without warning.
And this is normal?
Well, not normal like afternoon rush hour, but normal like tornadoes, yes.
And you're still going?
Even with everyone seated, Leslie had to look up at her much taller friend, astonishment plain on her face.
Are you insane?
Of course I'm going, Erin replied.
It's a geology field trip, not a tourist outing. If I can't handle risks, I might as well switch majors. And anyway, what's the fun in just staring at cold lava?
Fun? My God, Erin!
You've got some kind of death wish.
Ayanda put down her soda and cocked her head in Leslie's direction.
Lit majors, no sense of adventure.
Screw you and screw that,
Leslie retorted.
Friday nights at the High Dive are adventure enough, please and thanks.
I hope she wasn't burned too badly,
Erin said after a moment, tilting her head toward the TV.
That looked painful. Normal for Yellowstone doesn't make it any less traumatic for people caught in it.
Erin's phone beeped. She looked at it and sighed.
And with that, lunch is over. I, purely by coincidence, have a geology lecture. Want to come, Leslie?
Leslie rolled her eyes without comment and grabbed her book pile. With a casual wave, she headed off for her own class.
She has a point, though,
Ayanda said as she and Erin made for the lecture hall.
I've been hearing all kinds of rumors, over and above the news, I mean. Could it be getting perhaps a little dangerous for this trip?
We'll probably find out today, but I hope it doesn't get canceled.
If I wanted an office job, I'd take up programming like Matt.
They entered the lecture hall, making a beeline for their favorite seats. Dead center, 3rd row up, put them right at the instructor's eye level, perfect for getting his attention for Q&A.
Have you called Matt about canceling your Friday date yet? He promised you'd come to our next girls' night out.
Oh, jeez, no.
And I don't want to end up texting him, not after I lectured the poor guy about him changing plans by text. Oh, well, consistency is for small minds, right?
Ayanda opened her mouth to reply just as Professor Collins turned on his lapel microphone, resulting in an amplified pop. The background mutter of multiple conversations was replaced by the sounds of students straightening in their seats as everyone settled in for the lecture.
I'm sure you've all seen the news by now, the professor began.
A week ago, Geyser Hill opened a new fumarole right under a boardwalk and badly scalded some tourists. Yesterday, one of the local roads heated up while a tour group was walking around and trapped some of them. As scary as these events may be, they are neither unusual nor remarkable. Every couple of years, magma flowing under Yellowstone will heat up a pond and kill all the fish, or melt a road, or create a temporary new geyser. But in the age of smartphones, we have multiple videos of such events to help fan the flames of media sensationalism. So let me start by answering the, burning question, he added to groans from the audience. No, we are not canceling the Yellowstone field trip at this time. It was discussed at length, and we decided to go ahead. The university reserves the right to change its collective mind at any point, of course. I will post updates on my blog and send out an email blast as well if anything changes.
The professor paused, inviting comments or questions. Hearing none, he continued.
All right, then.
Today, as promised, we will be talking about the Toba eruption of roughly 75,000 years ago, the one that may have almost caused the human race to go extinct. He paused while a few latecomers got settled, and Erin whispered to her friend,
"Bet we get some cancellations anyway, wimps."
Ayanda chuckled, and Erin took the opportunity to look around. Row after semicircular row of seats rose into the darkness from the stage where the professor stood, dwarfed by the projector screen behind him. The indefinable aroma of paper dust pervaded the hall, an aroma that Erin had always found homey and comforting. Professor Collins used the remote to put a picture up on the screen.
"This is an artist's reconstruction of what the area might have looked like before the eruption of the Toba supervolcano."
He turned to face the students.
"When it erupted, Toba literally blew part of the mountain range into the air. The caldera it left behind contains a lake so big that you can't see the ends of it when you're in the middle. It's about 60 miles along its long axis."
A wave of the remote and the image changed.
"This is a picture of the Toba caldera today, or what's left of it."
The screen showed an idyllic aerial view of a large, calm, blue lake with a large island within. Human development along the shore alternated with jungle and meadows. The professor worked the remote, and a sequence of pictures showed different views of the shoreline and surrounding hills. He started to pace as he talked.
"Krakatoa met a similar fate. Where before there was a large mountainous island, afterward there was nothing but a bay, surrounded by some small atolls. But Krakatoa was a pipsqueak compared to Toba."
Several pictures were shown in succession, showing different before and after views. A student uphill from Erin raised her hand.
"So, Professor, how do you define a supervolcano versus a volcano?"
"It's a matter of size, and it's strictly arbitrary," Professor Collins replied. "Any eruption that ejects more than 240 cubic miles of crud into the air is considered super. And Toba sent up 670 cubic miles by most estimates. That more than qualifies. Mount St. Helens, by comparison, only managed less than one quarter of a cubic mile."
He played with the remote for a few seconds, pulling up another image.
"The damage to the planetary ecosystems from that much ash and dust in the atmosphere would have been devastating. It would have caused entire species to go extinct and changed the climate for large parts of the planet. It may even have hastened an ice age in the longer term, although that's controversial. There's a theory becoming popular that climate change is due to the Toba eruption caused a genetic bottleneck in Homo sapiens that may have directly contributed to us becoming what we are."
A student raised his hand.
"Will this be on the test?"
"Everything will always be on the test, Ted. The point is to understand it so you don't have to memorize it."
Ted really needs to get a clue, Erin thought.
All too soon the class was over. Professor Collins turned off the projector and said,
"Remember, next lecture will be a planning and Q&A session for the field trip, assuming it's still on. Make sure you have gone through your packets, and make sure that you have signed all the forms and handed them in. I don't want to have to chase you through the halls and tackle you. It's hard on the knees and very undignified."
The crowd responded with a susurrus of chuckles without slowing their collective bolt for the exits. Erin and Matt stood outside the door to her dorm, trying to be quiet and stay out of the way. Conversations in the hall were less than ideal with all the comings and goings, but she needed to make this quick. Not that Matt Siemens would need to be fended off, he was always a gentleman that way, but she was already late and didn't need more temptation. Erin took Matt's hand to try to soften the blow.
"I'm sorry, hon, but I did promise my friends. This might be the last time this semester we can all get together."
Matt nodded, not showing anywhere near as much disappointment as she expected. Erin found herself double-checking her memory
momentarily uncertain if she was blowing off a non-existent date. It was Friday, right? But he was nodding, and he wasn't looking perplexed, so that couldn't be it. Well, whatever. Being less disappointed than expected wasn't exactly nefarious behavior. That's okay, I understand. I'm a lot more worried about the field trip. I saw the news about the road melting. Matt held up his hands in a warding off motion as Aaron took a breath to argue. Yeah, I know. It happens. It's not unusual, you've told me. And I concede that you are the expert. Sorry, still worried. You're sure not dangerous, Matt, really. At least no more dangerous than at any other random time. I explained about magma movement and all that. This is like crossing the street. There's some danger every time you do it. Yeah, he grinned at her. And I still think a nice, cushy desk job. Not gonna happen, bud. Now, I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Matt shrugged and kissed her, then turned and headed down the hallway. Come to think of it, his gait was a little faster than seemed appropriate, almost like he had somewhere to be.
2. A Meeting of Minds. Bill Rustad looked up as Matt ambled to the table.
Hey, Matt. You don't look terribly beat up. I guess Aaron wasn't too angry at being blown off.
No, as it turns out, she took it well. I'll live to see another day.
Do we have time to eat?
Bill looked at his watch.
Maybe we should eat when we get to Dempsey's. Better food anyway.
There's an understatement, Matt said.
What? I am offended on behalf of the dining center. Why, they have some of the best... Now forget it, they suck.
Bill grinned at his friend.
Burgers it is.
Someday you're going to have to start paying some attention to your diet, oh pudgy one.
Bill patted his stomach.
That's your opinion.
Matt shrugged without reply, and Bill gathered his books and papers. As he vacated the table, another group slid smoothly in to take possession.
The university cafeteria ecosystem, Bill thought with an amused shake of the head. I'm surprised they haven't monetized table minutes yet.
Dempsey's was only a short walk from the campus, but Bill was breathing hard and beginning to sweat by the time they arrived. He kept his silence, but resolved to get off his ass more often. Fortunately, Matt wasn't one of those people who was inclined to gloat. Bill looked around as they entered the pub, his eyes struggling to adjust to the change in light levels. He caught a wave out of the corner of his eye and turned toward the table where Richard Nadeski and someone else were sitting. Bill tried to keep his face straight, but anyway you looked at it, this was going to be interesting. He and Richard had one of those hate-hate relationships, so Bill had been very surprised to receive the invitation. And to be fair, Bill's constant needling probably didn't help. Bill appraised the two men at their table as he approached. Richard, he already knew, of course. They'd been frenemies for years. Built like a fullback, despite seemingly never doing any exercise, Richard made even Matt look scrawny, and that was saying something. Fortunately, despite his size and temper, Richard never seemed to consider violence as an option. Just as well. The other guy was short, glasses, bad haircut, bad posture. Pretty much an anti-Richard. That the two were hanging out together screamed science project.
Hey, big guy, Bill said as he grabbed a chair and sat down. Quite the mysterious email, I admit to being intrigued. Any chance aliens are involved?
Both Richard and Matt rolled their eyes in unison, then both chuckled as they noticed the synchronicity. Richard reached out a hand to Matt.
Nice to know it's not just me. I'm Richard, and I guess you're the computer genius Bill promised to bring.
Bill noticed Matt sizing Richard up. Most people would miss the quick once-over, but Bill and Matt had been friends for, like, forever, and Bill had seen it many times. A lifetime of competitive martial arts meant that Matt couldn't help evaluating potential opponents. Richard was bigger, but Matt was harder. A bout would be epic, but Bill would put his money on Matt. The moment passed, and Matt nodded.
Yep, and I agree with Bill about the email. Something about some really oddball software and hardware requirements. Bill waved both hands. Whoa, gents, priorities? He signaled to a waitress. Food first, then reality. The fourth member of the party spoke without looking up.
That may not be as easy as you think.
What? Food or reality? Bill asked. Richard leaned forward to forestall an argument.
Guys, this is Kevin Jahani, the other half of our applied physics project. The more important half, honestly. Kevin has developed some theories about time and probability that are way ahead of current thinking. Kevin, Bill is the engineering guy I was telling you about. He was on the team that won the Rube Goldberg competition this year.
Kevin glanced in Bill's direction, and Bill thought he looked a little embarrassed, either at his comment or the introductions, or maybe both. Kevin appeared to be the type of alpha geek who rarely came up for air long enough to develop social skills.
Pfft, like I should talk? I spend my free time painting D&D miniatures.
Bill leaned back in his chair and absently looked around the dimly lit pub as the waitress took their orders. Dempsey's was less than half full, not surprising for a pub that depended on university students for most of its business. It was summer session at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and the population was down to a fraction of spring session levels. Small groups of customers had spaced themselves evenly around the pub for maximum privacy. The background buzz of conversation didn't quite drown out the big TV showing a baseball game. The waitress, having disappeared to wherever waitstaff go, it was time to get down to business. Bill looked at Richard.
Now, next item, mysterious email. Give.
Seriously? Parallel universes? Bill thought, his burger halfway to his mouth. At the same moment, Matt said,
Seriously? Parallel universes?
Richard pinched the bridge of his nose and took a deep breath.
Well, no. Not in the usual science fiction sense. When we say alternate world lines, we're talking about probability paths
through a six-dimensional space-time, added Kevin.
Okay, Kevin, I'll bite, Bill said.
One of 10 or 11 dimensions. This isn't string theory. Any curled up dimensions wouldn't...
Christ's sake, can we focus, please?
Richard sat back and looked around the table.
Okay, here it is.
We are attempting to put together a physics experiment to test Kevin's theoretical models about the nature of the universe and probability space. Without getting into details, Kevin believes that time is three-dimensional and that the extra dimensions are where quantum uncertainty manifests.
That's way oversimplifying, Kevin complained.
I know, Kevin, but I'm a physics major and I barely understand it. These guys need the pop sci version.
Richard made an apologetic face to Bill and Matt. Bill slouched back in his chair and listened as Richard explained the details. The theory, and Richard's plain English translation, contained a lot of hand-wavium, but the basic concept sounded interesting. This project could even end up being fun in a nerdish kind of way. Certainly the technical requirements were challenging based on discussions so far. The waitress showed up with more beer and Matt's burger, the one he'd ordered this time. Matt smiled and thanked her. The waitress apologized again and looked like she was going to start flirting. Richard's glare and curt, "Thank you," sent her off with a blistering look over her shoulder. Typical Richard, all the tact of an angry bear. Bill watched this byplay with wry amusement. As usual, he envied the way girls always seemed to throw themselves at Matt, and as usual, he was a little ashamed of feeling that way. Matt had certainly put in the hours. Bill glanced down at his own slight paunch, shrugged, and took another bite of his burger. Matt looked over and pointed to the side of his mouth. Bill frowned and wiped off a stray dollop of mustard. A short period of silence descended as everyone attended to their meals. The aromas of cooked beef, Caramelized onions and vinegarized fries wafted around the table. Matt paused in his task of burger destruction to take a sip of beer, then turned to Richard.
So, where do we come in?
Through the front door, Bill said before Richard could respond. Same as everyone else, Matt laughed.
Ba-boom! Tsh!
Richard sighed and visibly tried for patience. We need, he said, waving a French fry, some control software for this experiment. Matt, Bill said you're specializing in control systems, right? Linux on a card and such? What we're trying to do is too delicate for hardwiring and breadboarding, and the timing requirements are too precise for software. We need a firmware solution. Matt sat up straighter, a look of surprise on his face.
Hooked, by God, Bill thought. Well played, Richard.
Richard turned to Bill.
And you have a reputation as a bit of an artist when it comes to building weird-ass devices. Your engineering team's Rube Goldberg entry, that was mostly you, wasn't it? No one else on your team has done anything notable.
Bill strained to keep a straight face. He was proud of the contraption that had won them first place, but Richard's attempt at handling him was too transparent. Not wanting to give him the satisfaction, Bill waved his hand in a whatever gesture.
All right, you have our attention. But why all the mystery? You've been working on some project for, like, forever. Is this it? And why do you suddenly need help now?
Richard and Kevin glanced at each other, and Kevin nodded slightly. Bill's eyebrows went up. That was interesting. A decision had just been made, and it was Kevin who had made it. Was Richard the junior partner in this enterprise? It would mean that things were more complex than they already looked. Richard scooted his chair forward, a sign that he was about to do some major revealing.
So, here's the thing. Our original project proposal a couple of semesters back was a good deal less ambitious. Yes, we were trying to validate some of Kevin's theoretical predictions, but not to anything like the level we're at now. It was a nice, safe, forgettable project on paper, but things somehow turned out to be more interesting than expected.
But that's good, isn't it? Matt looked from one to the other. Shouldn't you be dancing a jig with your project advisor?
Richard glared at him.
Keating.
There was a brittle silence for a moment before Bill replied,
Dude, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Keating. He's at least 5 years past his expiry date, and all he cares about is dotting the T's and crossing the I's. If we go to him and tell him we've gone off script, he'll make us start over, or worse, give us an incomplete. Screw that.
Plus, Kevin added, if he disqualifies our results, we lose any university protection. We can't afford to have someone else take what we've done so far and run with it. Maybe with a bigger budget and more people.
Bill's jaw dropped.
Someone might do that? It's that big? Based on results so far, maybe Nobel Prize level,
Kevin said.
But not if someone snakes us.
Bill sat back, mind churning.
Son of a bitch.
Things were not just more complex, but had definitely left ordinary way behind. 3. In the news. CNN headlines at the top of the hour. Seismic activity continues to increase in Yellowstone National Park. USGS representatives stress that this is not unprecedented, saying the Yellowstone gets dozens of small earthquakes every day and there have been hydrothermal explosions and volcanic gas discharges in the past. Spokesperson Andrew Kensington says, it's a long way from a bit of volcanic activity to an impending supervolcano explosion. In Washington, Republicans are loudly questioning if FEMA would have the resources to handle such an eruption. They point to budget cuts that have forced FEMA to eliminate programs and are demanding that the Democratic administration confirm it has a plan.
Democrats are quick to point out that the cuts to FEMA funding were all enacted by Republican administrations, and that FEMA would have a much more generous budget if the Republicans would stop blocking all attempts to give them one.
And the Discovery Channel has announced that it will be rerunning its Supervolcano series this week due to viewer demand.
4. Time out.
June 8th.
How the hell does he do that? Does he ever miss?
Bill stood under the hoop, retrieving the basketball and tossing it back. Matt worked his way around the three-point circle, hitting basket after basket. They had come to the gym during off hours to get a bit of exercise. In Bill's case, that consisted of retrieving the ball and returning it. He preferred it that way. He didn't like exercise, and he was pretty sure it was mutual.
I'm not a basketball scout, Matt, but I'll bet the coach would be real interested in you.
I already had that conversation. They give you the spiel about having to eat, sleep, and breathe, insert your sport here, and my eyes glaze over. I've got my sport. Nothing else has ever hit me like mixed martial arts.
Ba-boom! Tsh!
Matt laughed. Thank you. I'm here till Thursday. Try the veal. Bill did his best to look offended.
Dude, that's my shtick? Do I go all kung fu on you?
Matt grinned back at him and resumed sinking baskets.
You know, it wouldn't hurt you. A martial arts class, I mean. Or basketball. Or something. I keep telling you, video games are not a valid form of exercise.
I've sat and watched some of your classes, Matt. I'd say it very definitely would hurt me. That seems to be the whole point of the classes. During a break, Bill brought up what had been on his mind all day.
This project with Richard and Kevin, does it seem a little out there to you?
A little?
How about a lot out there? It's one thing to talk about quantum computing, but this? The whole thing sounds like one of those B-movies you're always watching. I'm surprised you're not jumping for joy.
Well, you know, real life continues to disappoint me. I've been waiting my whole life, and not one alien species has come to visit. Not one monster from the deep has attacked New York or Tokyo, and not one evil mutant mastermind has destroyed the Golden Gate Bridge.
Maybe we have planetary B.O.
Yeah, that must be it. Matt did a couple of experimental dribbles, behind the back, through the legs, alternating hands. Bill hesitated, choosing his words.
So, really, do you have a funny feeling about this project? Does it seem legit to you?
No, and they've as much as said so. Keating, remember? I kind of feel sorry for them. They've got something genuinely interesting happening, and they have to sneak around to work on it.
Yeah, and it sounds like an interesting problem, at least to the extent I could understand what Richard was talking about. It's funny how solicitous he is of Kevin. I don't think he actually understands Kevin's theory at all, and he doesn't want to admit it. There's some coattail riding going on here, I think.
He's not the only one. Kevin might just be one of those geniuses that comes along once per generation. I get the impression he's way out in front of current theory, even further than Richard said, so I'm good with a seat on this particular coattail.
Sounds great if this turns into something big, but if it all tanks, could we end up getting caught in the fallout? I mean, technically these guys have gone rogue.
Matt laughed, then went silent and stared into space for a few seconds.
Possible in theory, I guess. But as long as we follow the rules from our end, I think we'll be okay. Jeez, Bill, stop being a wuss.
Matt planted his pivot foot and took a shot. Bill retrieved the ball and tossed it back.
Yeah, it's all fun and games until someone loses a scholarship.
5. Prepping. June 12th.
Professor Collins looked around the lecture hall for any more questions. Erin raised her hand, and he acknowledged her with a pointed finger.
Professor, I wanted to ask quickly, with all the heightened activity at Yellowstone, will we be able to get close enough to observe any of it?
Depends what you mean by close, Aaron. Close enough to see? Sure. Close enough to take lava samples? Not a chance.
Professor Collins smiled.
The university would toss me into a lava flow if I endangered the students like that. Maybe you could pack some binoculars.
Aaron turned and grinned at Ayanda and received an eye roll in response. On the stage, the professor continued.
Now, just a reminder, as if you needed it, that we leave day after tomorrow. Not surprisingly, I wasn't able to convince the university to spring for an all-expenses-paid trip to Sumatra for all of us to visit Toba.
He held up his hands in a gesture of helplessness.
So instead, we'll have to settle for a junket to Yellowstone in a rattling death trap of a school bus.
Several people in the audience laughed. Sounding a little panicked, one of the students piped up.
I thought we had a charter plane.
Just seeing if you're paying attention, Ted.
The professor put a document up on the projector.
I'd like to thank everyone for having completed the paperwork early so I don't have to come around and poke some of you with a stick. The university will be happy to know that you hold us blameless for anything that happens to you, and I do mean anything. Some lawyer financed his boat with that paperwork. We will be staying in the employee housing at Lake Village. Don't expect luxury. For that matter, don't expect beds. You'll get air mattresses, and you'll like it. We will be dividing into groups every day. There will be USGS staff leading you around and introducing you to the great big world of geology in a still-active volcano.
Professor Collins swapped in a new document, this one a list of dates and events.
You have your itineraries. See you in a couple of days at the airport for 5 fun-filled days of slogging around swamps, bogs, and forest, and being eaten alive by mosquitoes the size of pterodactyls.
Aaron accepted the glass of wine and scooched over as Matt sat and put an arm around her. She habitually slouched a little to fit into the embrace, one of the downsides of towering over most of her peers. She took an appreciative sip. Matt definitely knew his wines. It probably came naturally with the trust fund and all. Matt didn't talk much about it, and Aaron didn't try to pry. They hadn't yet reached the stage in their relationship where they shared everything, and there was a reserve about Matt that made her wonder what it was that he didn't want to discuss. Still, she couldn't really complain if her boyfriend was low maintenance. Aaron sighed with contentment as Matt played with the remote trying to bring up Netflix. He paused to give her a quizzical look, and she smiled back and said,
"You're lucky to have your own place. Dorm life is, well, not always good for relaxing."
"Yeah, my parents are happy to pay all the bills for school, but they're quick to point out that they're well off, not we're well off. Once I graduate, I'm on my own. My dad's very old school that way."
He looked for a moment like he was going to add something, then closed his mouth with an almost determined motion.
"At least computer science has high-paying jobs," Aaron said. "I'll probably end up as a teacher or a park ranger."
She knew from previous conversations that Matt's future prospects were a source of worry for him. His father was, apparently, a bit of a jerk, and she could well understand money problems. Trying to stay ahead of the tuition and textbook costs was a never-ending battle. Even getting enough saved in the first place had been touch and go.
"So you'll be gone for 5 days?" Matt said, evidently trying to steer the conversation into safer waters.
"Yes, and this is an unbelievable opportunity. We get an entire course credit for a 5-day field trip, 3 classes, and what amounts to a book report. Plus, the way Yellowstone has been acting up lately, it should be especially interesting."
"But not too interesting, I hope."
"Matt, the media has blown it out of proportion, just as they do with anything that can generate clicks. Yellowstone isn't doing anything that it hasn't been doing since before there were humans to see it."
"But not all at once." She frowned at him.
"Thank you, Mr. Statistics. Okay. Yes, Yellowstone has been active lately. There have been times in the past when it would have been completely dormant and boring. That's just as likely or unlikely as this spike. Anyway, we are going. There will be about 20 of us, and Professor Collins, of course, and his assistant, what's-his-face, the creepy guy, but as long as he stays away from me, I don't care.
I could kick his butt.
I could kick his butt, thank you very much.
You'll text her something while you're gone, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Aaron waved her now empty glass under his nose.
Say, didn't you promise to ply me with alcohol? I'm not feeling plied.
Matt hurried to the kitchen and grabbed the bottle. By the time he returned, Netflix was up and running. Aaron waved the remote at him.
Computer guy.
Pfft. 6. First run. June 13th. Bill looked at the closed lab door, then down at the box he was holding. Screw it. He gave the door two good kicks and stood back. A few seconds later, the heavy door opened and Matt peered out at him.
Subtle. Real class.
Bite me! This thing's getting heavier by the second! Matt stood aside, holding the door as Bill entered. He paused to look around the room, a typical lab setup. There was a central open area plus a smaller antechamber protected by safety glass. In the center of the room, two tables held a bewildering array of boxes, breadboard rigs, and cables. A third table held only some loose cable ends. Richard sat at a console that consisted mostly of breadboarded panels with switches, dials, and indicator lights sticking up at odd angles. It was less a mad scientist kind of look and more of a ham radio hobbyist vibe. At Richard's gesture, Bill put his box down on the third table. He flipped it open and carefully unwrapped the enclosed item, then took the loose cables and attached them to appropriate connectors on his device. Richard came over to get a closer look. Bill's apparatus consisted of a cubical wireframe cage, about 12 inches on a side, with an opening at one end. A metal hoop about 8 inches in diameter encircled the opening, with 9 odd-looking hieroglyphic symbols spaced equidistantly around the rim. Richard bent closer to examine the hoop, did a double take, and gave Bill an accusing glare.
Yeah, Matt said with a laugh. Stargate decorations, you didn't see that coming?
Richard squeezed the bridge of his nose between thumb and forefinger and seemed to struggle for a moment.
Fine, as long as it works.
Matt examined the apparatus quizzically.
What exactly does it do?
Kevin held up a small assembly in his hand.
The cage will contain a volume of shifted probability space. The gate, that's the hoop, allows us to access that space visually while the experiment is running. This will give us visual confirmation of a shift.
Well, that's clear as mud, Matt muttered.
Kevin placed the device in the cage through the hoop.
This is just a gadget to generate interference patterns. It will shine a laser through a set of gratings and project a random interference pattern onto the screen.
He pointed to a small white screen at the front of the device.
We are hoping to modulate the interference pattern using our experimental setup. This is just a calibration run. We want to be sure we still get the same results with the new hardware and control software.
Bill frowned at Matt.
You already set up your software? Of course, unlike some people I got here on time.
You know, smug is not a good look.
Matt grinned at his friend, then pointed at the hoop and cage.
So that does what?
Richard spoke before Bill could reply.
Bill's Stargate knockoff uses carefully timed lasers and splitters to generate what Kevin calls quantum self-entanglement. It allows us to dial up different locations in probability space for the same physical space. The Faraday cage limits the effect to the enclosed volume, otherwise it diffuses immediately.
Matt shook his head.
I'm still lost.
Honestly, me too, Richard replied. I don't think anyone on the planet except Kevin understands it, but I'm rolling with it, you know?
Bill grinned at the rare display of vulnerability but decided not to comment. Richard, after an embarrassed pause, turned to his control rig.
All right, kiddies, it's showtime. We'll turn on the interference generator, then our equipment, then start varying things.
Kevin checked two cameras that had been placed in the corners of the room. He placed a third camera directly in front of the hoop, started all the cameras recording, reached into the gate, and flipped a small switch. The large monitor in the back of the lab showed a close-up of the small device as seen by the third camera. It displayed an interference pattern projected on the device's screen, reminiscent of the ripples produced by throwing two stones into a calm pond.
"Now I'm going to vary the phase lock," Richard announced.
As they watched the monitor, the interference pattern started to wobble. Over several seconds, it became much more complex, then simpler, narrowing at one point to a single circle, then back.
"Again, it's important to understand," Kevin said, lecturing into the air, "that we are not doing anything directly to the device that I placed in the cage. It's nothing more than a laser going through some apertures and producing an interference fringe. It should sit there showing the same thing until the battery dies. The changes you're seeing are caused by our experiment tuning in to different versions of reality. We are, in a sense, moving through the multiverse."
They stared at the pattern for a few more seconds. Richard stopped playing with the controls, and the interference settled into a stable pattern.
"And that's a wrap," he said, and powered down the equipment.
Bill stared at the monitor, then at Richard and Kevin, who both seemed unsurprised by the results.
"So, is that what you were expecting?"
"Yes," Kevin said. "And if you look at the pattern on the screen right now, it's not the same one we started with."
Bill examined the screen for several seconds, then shrugged.
"I'll have to take your word for that. I didn't memorize the original, but what does that mean for your experiment?"
"It means we've modified reality,"
Kevin gestured at the setup impatiently.
"We took a stable wave pattern, caused it to move through its probability space, then selected a different result."
"Selected a different result? Modified reality? You changed a final result. That's..."
Bill turned to look at Matt, whose eyes were bugging out as much as Bill imagined his were.
"Kind of mind-boggling, honestly."
Richard said nothing, but a grin slowly formed, despite obvious attempts to maintain a straight face. Then Bill frowned.
"But normally when history changes, so do the memories of the characters, at least in all the movies I've seen. How is it that we remember the screen showing something different?"
"We didn't change history, Bill. Just selected a different current reality, and one that exists only inside the cage. Essentially, we're tuning in to a different world line. We're shifting reality sideways inside the cage so that we're seeing a different result of a random event than what we started with. But the pattern is different now, so the change is permanent."
"Yeah," Richard replied. "We didn't expect any of this when we first ran this experiment. We've run it dozens of times since, and it's never failed. The trouble is that we don't really understand why it's happening. With help from you and Matt, you on the hardware, Matt on the software, we're hoping to get a better grip on what's going on."
"How big can this get?"
Matt asked.
"I mean, how much reality could you affect?"
"Don't know," Kevin replied. "The models don't predict anything about mass or dimensions. I think it's all about how well you can tune into the probability space."
Bill grunted absentmindedly, still staring at the cage and its contents.
"So, what now? What's the next step?"
Richard gestured to Kevin.
"Time to bring out the flipper."
"Hey, there's a technical term for you," Bill said.
"I don't know what else to call it," Richard replied. "We literally cut the dice bubble out of an old trouble game and added a delay to the pop. Real high tech."
Kevin came back with a plastic hemisphere with a single die inside and placed it in the cage. As before, he set a video camera on a tripod in front of the gate to record the event and checked the other two cameras in the corners of the room.
Okay, Richard said. Ready to go. Turn on the flipper.
Kevin reached into the cage, pushed down on the bubble, and gave a thumbs up.
30 seconds to event.
Richard made a few adjustments on his breadboarded control panel and placed his finger on a rocker switch.
Ready here.
The second seemed to stretch forever while everyone watched.
Maybe we'll modify it for a shorter interval next time, Kevin muttered.
The flipper gave a pop. The die bounced off the plastic dome and landed on 4. Then Richard flipped the rocker switch, tweaked a dial, and said,
Okay, how about now?
Matt pointed at the monitor. There were now 2 dice in the globe, the original one showing 4 and another one showing 2.
I had my eye on it the whole time. The second die kind of faded in.
Bill abandoned the monitor and walked over to the device, looking through the bars of the cage. He saw the single original die, but when he looked through the circular aperture of the gate, there was a second die as well.
Mind blown, he thought, stepping back to the monitor. There will definitely be some coattailing.
Without warning, there was a loud bang, accompanied by a flash, so brief it barely registered as light. Everyone jumped. After a few seconds, when nothing else happened, they moved to the table. The die showed a 6 now, even looking through the gate, and the assembly had jumped across the table a few inches.
Is that a third die, or did the bang knock over the original? Bill asked.
Richard gestured toward the monitor.
Good question. Let's look at the video.
Kevin pointed the remote at the camera and started the replay on the monitor. They watched for the same interminable 30 seconds or so, punctuated by Kevin's recorded background comment. The die seemed to fade out of focus and then back in, but as 2 dice. Then the monitor showed the bang, flash, and movement of the whole assembly.
I can't tell, Kevin said. It could be one of the 2 dice, or it could be a 3rd one replacing them.
I'd call it inconclusive, except the bang itself is a significant event, Matt added. So what the heck was that?
Don't know for sure, Richard replied. If I had to guess, I'd say probability space inside the cage snapped back to our reality with enough force to knock things around. Unfortunately, that means we don't know what exactly happened. I guess we need to tweak our design a bit. And, guys, let's keep this quiet, okay? This is starting to sound like cold fusion or perpetual motion or something crazy. If it gets out, Keating will pull the plug for sure. For now, Matt and I will refine the control system so we can lock onto something and stay locked. Matt, I'll send you an email with specs. Bill, I wonder if I could borrow your engineering skills again to build a bigger and more robust cage and, gate. Maybe without the decorations.
Well, how can I resist a request like that? The engineering department isn't quite as deserted as physics. It turns out we're bigger nerds than you guys, but I'm pretty sure I can get away with some more light off-hours metal work.
Couple of days.
Richard looked at Matt and Bill. Seeing no argument, he continued.
Well, okay then. We'll plan on another run on Friday.
Matt and Bill left together, leaving Richard and Kevin to the tedious process of post-experiment analysis. As they walked down the hall, Bill turned to Matt.
Let's keep this quiet, he says. Gee, you think?
Rogue physicists. Good grief.
7. Interesting times. June 14th. Bill made a beeline for the dining center, his gaze locked on his destination. His body language screamed, "Do not hassle me." Apparently, the demonstrators du jour got the hint and no one approached him to proselytize. As Bill reached the entrance, he heard Matt calling him. Turning, he spotted his friend coming from another direction. Bill leaned on the door and paused to catch his breath. Matt smiled at him.
exercise really is your friend. Maybe yours. With me, it's more of a frenemy. Done for the day?
Yeah, homework time.
Plus, I downloaded something on probability theory. Like it or not, this experiment of Richard and Kevin's has me hooked. I want to do a little reading so I maybe have some idea of what I'm getting into.
And I got homework from Richard. He gave me specs for some software changes. I'll make sure he's finished thinking up mods, then I'll burn the new EEPROMs. He wants a user interface as well, running on a tablet.
They looked around for a good table. Bill sniffed the air.
Unidentified frying objects. Pass.
Once they were seated, Bill pulled his tablet out of his backpack.
Heard from Erin?
She's having a blast.
Metaphorically, I mean. Matt smiled. She does love her geology.
Erin wasn't Matt's normal girlfriend material, although Bill thoroughly approved. Tall, athletic, attractive without necessarily being what Bill would call pretty, near the top of the grade curve, and very driven. A surprising choice for someone as laid back as Matt. But he seemed quite taken with her, maybe more than he realized. Bill bookmarked his work, then set his tablet aside and looked up at his friend.
You get Richard's email about the next test run?
Yep, another exciting evening flipping dice.
Dude, I'm confused. You were as excited as me about the implications of this.
Yeah, you're right, Matt admitted. In principle, it's a huge deal. But the way those guys were talking the first day, I was almost expecting the time tunnel or something. Dice flipping seems, I don't know, small.
I hope they're going to up their game.
Be careful what you wish for. That's usually the point where an alien spawn bursts out of someone's chest.
Okay, Captain Reference, I'll be there for the bursting.
Listen, Matt, I may kid a lot, but this really does sound like something significant. I told you that Richard wouldn't sit in the same room with me, let alone invite me into the project without a good reason. I think these guys actually are onto something, and probably way out of their depth. I say we need to take steps to hitch our wagon to this train.
Western movie metaphors now, you're slipping.
Just keeping you on your toes. But I mean it, Matt. Stay on top of this.
8. Field trip. June 15th. Erin and Ayanda huddled together, trying to avoid elbows and feet. The room was far too crowded, with geology students and park staff milling about with no discernible organization. In one corner, Professor Collins was trying to have a discussion with some of the senior park rangers, his voice climbing in volume to compete with the general noise level. Just as the din approached the point of actual pain, one of the rangers pulled out a whistle and blew a long blast. Conversations ceased as if the power had been cut. Collins nodded to the ranger.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, people, we're as organized as we're going to be, so let's get things rolling. First, pop quiz.
There were groans from the audience, and Collins grinned.
Ranger Henderson here tells me that the water level has risen on the east end of Yellowstone Lake and dropped on the west side. Can anyone tell me what that means?
Several students raised their hands, and the professor pointed to one.
Brett?
It means the land has risen on the west side, which is part of the lava dome. The water has rushed over to the other end.
That's correct. So, Brett, what can we expect next from the lava dome?
Hopefully that it stops doing that.
Collins waited for the laughter to die down, then continued.
Now, we're going to split into... He was interrupted by another student.
Professor, it's not just that there's been uplift. I've heard that the amount of uplift is unprecedented, and it's making some people nervous.
Henderson held up his hand as Collins opened his mouth to answer.
I'll field this one, Robert. Young lady, do I look nervous?
He paused for a moment, grinning.
Uplift has accelerated recently, but it's not unprecedented, whatever your sources may be saying. There are a lot of Chicken Little types out there who start running around in tight little circles the moment something goes out of routine, but the nature of a chaotic system guarantees that you'll get outlier measurements occasionally. There's nothing to indicate that this sequence is ominous. The student looked unconvinced but didn't respond. Erin turned her gaze back to the professor, who raised a hand to get everyone's attention. As I was saying, we'll divide into groups. We have staff from the USGS who will be performing their rounds, checking GPS transceivers, placing some of the remote units, and so forth. You'll be tagging along. Some of you will be helping them with logging any maintenance requirements. Others will get to do the more glamorous activities, like slogging through swamps. There are fumaroles to observe, hot springs to measure, rock strata to examine, and conclusions to reach. Tonight we will feast on hot dogs, not the name brand kind either, and compare notes. Everyone back here by 7 p.m. Erin and Ayanda shuffled slowly toward the posted group list. Erin was relieved to find that her group didn't include Creepy Guy. Erin could understand why the professor would keep Jensen as an assistant. His knowledge of geology was encyclopedic, his memory was near perfect, and he seemed to be quite happy to obsess over the smallest detail until he wrestled it into submission. Still, he gave off a vibe that made Erin want to be elsewhere when he was around.
When he looks at you, it's like he's dissecting you, she'd thought on her first day.
She'd found him staring at her every time she looked up. The last time, she had glared back at him until he dropped his eyes. Since then, she'd seen him staring at other girls the same way. Erin found herself grouped with Ayanda, along with Ted and Sheila. She knew those two by name, but had never hung out with them. Still, they all seemed to hit it off right away.
Going to be a good time.
The four of them waited until their guide came over and introduced himself.
I'm Doug Shaw, and we will be doing a tour of some of the geology today, not the touristy destinations like Old Faithful. We'll be examining rock strata and looking for the ash and lava layers. Not as dramatic, but far more significant. So, let's get this show on the road.
They piled into Doug's Jeep and held on for their lives as he took off with a reckless disregard for the rules of the road and the laws of physics. He grinned at their panicked expressions.
We get our excitement where we can, kids.
It felt like it took only a few minutes to get to their destination near West Thumb. Erin considered getting down on her knees and kissing the ground, but decided she wouldn't give Doug the satisfaction. It was a fair bet that he was deliberately trying to scare them. Succeeding, too, from the look on Ted's face. Doug grabbed his pack and pointed up the hill, then set off while everyone else was still getting organized. As soon as Erin and the others caught up, he began to talk.
All right, it's time for the disillusioning. Here's reality. You study geology, you get out of college, and you expect to spend all your time hiking around, looking at the scenery, checking and measuring and digging, except you spend most of your time on paperwork and meetings. The level of bureaucracy is simply staggering.
Okay, Erin said. But every job has paperwork, right?
Doug shook his head.
Not like this. Then there are the PR duties. You guys would not believe how much time I spend in person or on the phone or via email reassuring the public about the probability of eruptions or explaining why we can't do anything about the volcano, like I'm supposed to hose it down or something. And, of course, we give tours to the public. Those can be good or bad, depending on the group. Sometimes I find myself wondering why I pushed myself through college just to listen to some kid whining about how his feet hurt from walking around in his flip-flops.
He swiped two fingers across his forehead, right to left.
Turista.
He put on a sorrowful expression and the students chuckled. Erin was learning that people wandering around Yellowstone with wildly inappropriate and inadequate clothing and gear were a standard gag with the park staff. Doug stopped and turned to the others.
One time, we walked to the top of Mammoth Hot Springs, and there was a lady up there in a dress and 5-inch stilettos. Anyway, these tours with students like you are the best. I get to do the things I came here to do in the first place, and I get to talk about it with people who won't go catatonic on me.
They had started near Delusion Lake and hiked in the general direction of Flat Mountain Arm, checking seismic monitoring stations on the way. At each stop, Doug unlocked the enclosures, performed some basic diagnostics on the GPS and internet connection, and discussed the purpose of the equipment and some of the causes of breakdowns. It was routine work, but the whole process fascinated Erin. She promised herself that when she graduated, she would be aiming for Yellowstone.
So, what's your opinion of the recent events, like the melting road and new fumarole at Geyser Hill and such?
Ionda asked. No comment. Erin stopped dead and stared at Doug.
No comment? Are you kidding? The massive increase in uplift? No comment?
Doug stopped and turned to his charges. He started a couple of attempts to respond, then sighed.
I have my opinions, of course, but I'm an employee and I like my job.
Can we leave it at that, please? The students traded bemused looks, then Erin replied,
Sure, Doug.
The exchange had cast a pall over the group, though, and they proceeded for several minutes in silence. Then, as they walked up a small rise near the lake, the ground shook for several seconds.
Whoa, did you feel that?
Erin said. Yeah, about a 3, 3.5, Doug replied. No biggie, we get dozens of quakes per day, although you don't notice most of them. The trees barely moved on that one.
There have been a lot of swarms lately, haven't there?
Doug glared at Erin, but didn't respond. She found that more unnerving than his earlier demurral. Ted, meanwhile, did not look reassured.
We're not in any danger, are we?
Doug stopped and turned to him. Listen, Ted, you're walking around in the caldera of a former supervolcano, which is very much not extinct. Of course it's dangerous. But to put it into perspective, statistically, you're more likely to die walking around downtown Lincoln. Ted looked even less reassured.
Yeah, but what are the chances?
He was cut off by a loud grinding sound and another quake, this one strong enough to make them lose their balance. The pines swayed back and forth as if gripped in a tornado. In the distance, there was a crack and a crashing sound just as the shaking stopped. The smell of damp dust hung in the air, and a shower of needles fell from the trees.
Ow, my butt,
Sheila said, massaging the injured area.
That's not part of the tour. This is unacceptable. Who do I complain to?
She smiled tentatively at Doug. Doug seemed to have gotten over his earlier surliness, and he grinned at Sheila. That was more like a 5. Then he lost the smile. I think it took down a tree. Ted tried again.
So, the chances...
Before he could finish the sentence, the ground shook hard enough to toss the students off their feet. This quake was accompanied by a grinding, thudding sound like a fully loaded dump truck making an emergency stop on gravel.
Holy! Doug yelled as trees began to topple.
Shit!
Erin screamed.
That's...
Tree after tree lost the battle with gravity. Loose rocks skittered down the slope, and a cloud of dust rose several feet off the ground. After a few more seconds, the quake stopped.
Getting upward to a 7!
Doug finished, his eyes wide and staring. The group picked themselves up off the ground, hands spread out defensively, ready to hit the dirt if another quake occurred. They heard a loud sloshing sound, which Erin realized was the lake pouring back into its basin. As she looked around, she could see that a significant number of trees had gone down. In many cases, the shaking had produced a domino effect, with each tree leaning on the next. Doug finished examining the scenery, looked at his charges, and said,
I think we'd maybe better cut this short.
No one argued, so they did an about-face and hiked back to where they had parked. On the way, Doug's phone rang. He flipped it open and put it to his ear.
Hey.
Uh-huh.
You're kidding.
Wow, that bad?
Yeah, I understand.
No.
No, we're on our way.
Okay, bye. He turned to the group.
Bad news, kiddies. Vacation has been canceled. This quake was a 7+. It's opened some fissures, and we've got an honest-to-God partial collapse in the caldera. Not big, but still. Anyway, some of your classmates were injured, and your prof is pulling the plug.
Oh, heck, Aaron exclaimed. Just when it was getting interesting.
Ted looked at her as if she'd grown an extra head.
Still no comment?
Ayanda said to Doug. Doug gave her a sour look.